The tarpaulin that originally served Matt as a bedroll cover worked just as well as a shroud, but it was distasteful work even so. Once the body was inside the tarp with rope lashings all around, it was heavy work to get it up the steep slope of loose, slippery rock, but between them, they managed. The task was finally done, and the body was loaded onto the patient little mule.
Thank you. I could not have done this by myself.
Matt did not answer. He was no stranger to death, far from it. But Pete's murder hit him particularly hard. Pete had been a friend, and young. He had left behind a lovely young widow and a fine son, with another child on the way. That was ugly. All the more so because the murderers knew about Pete's family. At the same time, both brothers found sobering the distinctive scent of burnt gunpowder in the air and the sharper, far uglier stink of blood and excreta from the carnage on the level above.
I don't want to go up and look.
No, no point.
Matt looked at his brother, but as always in situations like this, Sam's face was impassive. Matt could not tell if Sam was unaffected by the slaughter that had taken place up there, or if it actually pleased him. The brothers rode in complete silence for the first hours of their journey off the mountainside and down to the Branville Ranch. It was not until hours later, when they were within a few miles of the Branville homestead, that Matt came out with it and asked the question.
Tell you the truth, my brother. My thoughts were selfish ones.
Selfish? Whatever could you mean by that?
While the Apache were back there at the mine doing the things that needed to be done to punish those whites for their crimes, all I could think about was that Coronado or some of his band were doing the things that I vowed I would do.
I don't understand.
When that man Wilhelm was beating me with that bamboo flail that he seemed to love so much, I made a vow. I promised myself that I would one day face Wilhelm man to man and make him regret the things he did to me and to so many others before me. Now, that is a pleasure that was granted to Coronado instead of to me.
Then perhaps there is a reason why that was so.
I could have taken him. You met him. You know.
I do know, brother. And I agree that you could have taken him in any sort of fight or contest. I also know that revenge is a strange thing. It's a two-edged sword and it can cut with both sides. Could be that seeking revenge would have done more hurt to you than it did to him.
Are you saying?
Don't get riled, Sam. I'm just saying maybe there's reasons for things that you and me don't always know about. All we can do is the best we can. Do our best at what we think is right and let it go.
You're right. Which only tells me that there has to be a first time for everything.
Yeah? Now tell me the one about how even a blind pig finds an acorn every once in a while.
I don't think I know that story, Matt. Tell it to me, please.
Come on, idiot. Pete's place. I guess I mean to say Anita's place is right over yonder. And I don't want to ride into that yard laughing and us pulling Pete's body along with us.
No. This time I am very sorry to say that you are right again, my brother.
They rode the last few hundred yards in silence. Matt felt comfortable enough there to dismount without waiting for an invitation, but Sam stayed in the saddle. It was he who held the lead rope to the mule carrying the body in its impromptu shroud. Anita must have heard them ride in. She came to the door, a dish towel in her hand, and smiled when she saw Matt.
You are back. Good. I wonder where you had gotten to. And this would be the brother I heard so much about.
That's right, ma'am. This is Sam.
It is a pleasure to meet you, Sam. Pete told me so much about both of you.
Anita started forward with her hand extended in welcome, but stopped short when she saw the shape of the burden on the back of the little Spanish mule. Anita's hand flew to her mouth, and her eyes grew wide in sudden pain and horror.
No! Oh! No! Oh.
She whirled and raced back inside the house, slamming the door closed, as if that would shut out the ugly reality that had fallen upon her. Matt turned his back to the house of anguish and snatched his hat off in frustration.
What now?
Matt looked mutely up at his brother, then shrugged and motioned for Sam to get down.
I figure we can store the body just like it is. I haven't looked around all that much, but Maybe there's a spring house that would stay cool. If not, we'll put Pete in a shed or something.
Where we should put Pete is into the ground.
Yeah, I know, but it's been so long already that another day or two isn't going to make all that much difference. Anita's Catholic. That's one of the things she mentioned while I was here. How proud and happy her family was when Pete converted to the church. You can't go into town, of course. You might be recognized there, but I'm still all right with the folks in San Eva, I think. I can go in and get the priest, bring him back here for the burying. I think that would be safer than taking Pete to the church. After all, nobody is supposed to know about any of this.
While you are in San Eva, you might tell them about the massacre at the mine. You could say that you were prospecting nearby and heard gunfire and screams, but you were too frightened to see what happened there.
Good idea.
The brothers conducted a brief search of the available spots, looking for some place that would be shaded and relatively cool. Eventually, they settled for putting Pete's body in a zinc-lined grain bin. It might or might not stay cool there, but at least it would be safe from rats.
Go on now, Matt. Go get the priest. I'll just wait on the porch while the lady and her boy adjust to losing Pete.
Right.
Matt picked up the mule's lead rope. They would not be needing it again, so he might as well return it to the livery while he was in town. Then mounted his horse and turned it toward the road. This was turning out to be a long day, and a hard one. Matt was just about worn down to a nub by the time he reached San Eva and Doc Tippett's livery. The day was late and the miles many, but he still had a long way to go. He turned the little mule into the corral and went back into the barn to find Doc.
Sorry to bother you, but I was wondering, could I leave my horse here for a few days and take a fresh mount while it's resting up? At your regular rates, of course.
Take your pick, son. There won't be any charge for the use of the horse. It was worth it to me to see the look on Lawrence's face when he and those Mexicans of his came dragging up into town looking madder than an entire flock of wet hens. If I was you, Matt, I'd stay clear of Lawrence from now on.
Thanks for the advice, Doc. I'll be sure and take it if the choice is left up to me.
Matt switched his saddle to a likely-looking paint that hadn't been in Doc's corral the last time he was there. The horse was not tall, but it had a broad chest with the forelegs set well apart and good hindquarters. It was no beauty, with a ratty tail and pencil neck, but it was not looks that Matt wanted. He shook hands with Doc and headed out into the gathering dusk, hoping he could catch the priest at the little church down at the Mexican end of town. He made it halfway there.
Tam!
The name meant nothing to him at first.
Hey there, O'Shanter!
Oh, yes. That silliness out at the mine. He had given that name to Case Wilhelm when he took the ambush party's horses there. But Wilhelm was dead now, wasn't he? Matt reined the paint to a halt. He could see the form of the man who called out to him, but he was standing in shadow, and it took Matt a moment to realize that it was indeed Wilhelm. The man must not have been at the mine when Coronado's Apaches struck. That was news Sam would be interested in.
Howdy!
Matt had to wonder, though, if the jig was up about his little joke with the name.
How are you this fine evening, Wilhelm?
It was not until the name was already out of his mouth that Matt realized he could not remember if Wilhelm had introduced himself out there, or if this was knowledge he was not supposed to have. No, the man had been friendly. He had given Matt his name. Hadn't he? Wilhelm stepped out from under the overhang along the sidewalk and came toward the paint.
I heard you had a little run-in with some friends of mine.
Were they your friends? I wish I'd known that. We might have gotten along a little better if I had.
That could be. Mention it to them the next time you see them.
I will, if there's a next time.
Lawrence tells me there will definitely be a next time.
Really? Face to face? By himself with no gang of riflemen to do the shooting for him? Somehow, Mr. Wilhelm, I don't think that is something I have to worry about.
I heard that, you son of a bitch!
The man called out onto the sidewalk. Lawrence. He looked mad enough to spit.
Are you sure you want to call me that, mister?
I'm sure. I'm also calling you a coward. Sneaking up on us like you done, that's a coward's way of doing it.
Let me see if I got this straight. You and your friends lay an ambush for me. Five of you to one. Then when I turn the tables, I'm the one who's a coward while you and your boys are the wrong parties. Is that the way you see it?
Well...
Matt stepped down from the paint and dropped the reins.
Is that the way you see it, Lawrence? I already know you're a back shooter and a sneak, but are you a coward too?
Lawrence did not seem to very much like the situation he found himself in now. Obviously, he had been making some loud talk to his boss, but that was before Matt showed up to call his bluff. Now he had to go through with a fight one-on-one or backwater.
Maybe I got things wrong. I can see how you might have thought we was waiting to ambush somebody, but that ain't it at all. We was waiting for a deer to come down that road. They're known to do that, you know. We's out there hunting deer. But I can see how you'd have misunderstood. There's, no hard feelings now that I see you come to make such a mistake.
What if I have hard feelings?
Don't, oh, Jesus.
Lawrence quickly unbuckled his gun belt and let it down onto the boards of the sidewalk.
Don't shoot me!
Of course not. After all, nobody here has hard feelings. Isn't that right, Case? You, him, me? We none of us got hard feelings.
Wilhelm gave Lawrence a withering look that suggested the man was very quickly going to find himself unemployed, in addition to being seen in town as a coward and a backshooter.
Is that right, Case? There's no hard feelings by anybody.
Yeah, that's for sure, Tam. That's for sure.
Wilhelm bent and picked up Lawrence's gun belt and draped it contemptuously over his shoulder. Lawrence made no effort to retrieve his weapon. The would-be gunman retreated back indoors as inconspicuously as he could.
Can I ask you something, Tam?
Go ahead, friend.
I asked my boss about you.
That would be Williams?
That's right. I work for Mr. Williams. He said he tried to hire you. There's an opening, you know. A couple of them, maybe. Have you given his offer any thought? He pays real good.
Well, that's nice of you, Case. I thank you for thinking about me.
Will you join us?
I reckon not, thanks.
Kind of wish you'd change your mind about that, Tam. I sure would hate to see you and me on opposite sides of the fence. There's something you ought to know, though. That idiot Lawrence only thinks he's good with a gun. Me, I am as good as Lawrence thought he was. Guns, fists, knives, it don't matter to me. I can handle all of them. And as you can see, I'm still walking upright. Nobody I've ever faced can say the same.
Thank you for the warning, Case. I appreciate it.
I meant that job offer, you know. I still do.
I'll tell you something true, Case. I hope there's never need for the two of us to settle anything between us, but if we do, may the better man win and no regrets afterward.
I like your style, Tam. Dang me for a fool if I don't.
G'day, Case.
Matt touched the brim of his Stetson, then swung back onto the paint. He still had to go find that priest and get him out to the Branville place. Father Estevan did not own a horse, did not have any English either, but at the moment, that was the lesser of Matt's problems with the man. Through an English-speaking parishioner, the scrawny padre explained that he knew where he could borrow a burro if that would help.
Well, no, I don't reckon it would. I'd hoped to get out of town without anybody knowing what I was doing here, but that might not be possible. Tell you what, I'll go back to Doc Tippett's livery and borrow another horse. Then I'll come back here. Tell him to wait right here, please. I won't be long.
Say, senor. I will tell him. He will be ready, senor.
Matt felt like he was running a gauntlet when he passed the length of the town, now in full darkness, but he saw no one who took any interest in him, at least no outward display of interest, and ran into neither Case Wilhelm nor the frustrated bully boy named Lawrence. Matt was not sorry to have missed them. He selected a docile, heavy-bodied gray for Father Estevan to ride and led it back through the town to the church.
Ready, Father?
The parishioner had to translate even that. Not that Matt found that to be unreasonable. He would not have understood if the same very simple question had been asked of him in Spanish. Matt helped the priest awkwardly into the saddle, then swung onto his rented paint. It was well past dark when the two left the church, and Matt was on edge. his hand resting close to the grips of his colt until they cleared the outskirts of San Eva and were on the road to the Branville place.
If you need to stop for any reason, Father, just... What am I asking you for anyhow? You don't understand a word I'm saying.
The little priest, who looked to be a man of 50 or so, with more gray than black than his tonsure, smiled and nodded. Matt was sure he could have sung filthy drinking songs, and the padre would have had the same outward response. The priest was willing, even eager, to go once he heard that he was needed to perform the rituals of the church for a deceased parishioner. He was carrying a bundle containing his vestments and Bible, a tiny vial of holy water, and Matt could not begin to comprehend what else. The main thing from Matt's point of view was that Anita would be comforted. She badly needed that.
I expect we'll be there before midnight.
Matt wanted to make the priest comfortable with his tone of voice, whether the actual words were understood or not.
I don't know how hard we can push these horses, as I'm not familiar with either one of them. Doc Tippett says they're pretty good for rented horses. But then, you know how rented horses are, don't you, Father?
Father Esteban smiled and bobbed his head up and down. Matt was not entirely sure if that was an effort to be agreeable, or if it was simply in response to the motion of the gray.
Tomorrow, after we get through the barrier, we can...
Matt did not wait for explanations. He vacated the saddle and dashed into the brush on the roadside, leaving the paint, the gray, and Father Esteban to fend for themselves. Lawrence, he wondered, or Wilhelm? It could be both of them. It was unlikely, though, that there would be a gang of Mexican toughs backing up Lawrence tonight. Not since their pay would have to come out of Lawrence's own pocket now that he'd been fired. Matt stopped dead still once he got out of the open roadway and into the brush. In here, his ears were of far greater importance than his eyes. He stood in silence, listening, waiting for the shooter to make a mistake. Matt did not have long to wait. Nat had come off the paint so quickly that the ambusher must have thought he'd hit his target and that Matt was down. Apparently anxious to finish the job, the gunman broke cover and came out of hiding almost immediately. The man was not very good in the woods. Matt palmed his Colt and moved toward the approaching sounds. He positioned himself slightly to one side of the fellow's route and stepped back inside the spread of branches on a stunted cedar, letting the foliage, such as it was, break his outline and help to conceal him from view. A dark figure soon appeared heading toward a patch of open ground immediately in front of Matt. The ambusher was indeed Lawrence, as Matt could easily see by the shape of his hat creases and the set of his shoulders. He was carrying a rifle held at waist level. Matt waited until Lawrence was a pace beyond the cedar.
Drop it.
Lawrence would not have jumped any harder or any higher if Matt had rammed the sharp end of a bayonet into his kidneys.
Drop it.
It was excellent advice, but Lawrence did not take it. Instead, he himself dropped to one knee, swiveling around as he did so. He tried to lift the Winchester to his shoulder. Taking no chances, Matt moved quickly, if blindly, to the side. But there was no return gunfire. Matt shook his head and blinked rapidly, trying to restore his vision. When he could see again, he saw that Lawrence was down and would stay that way. Blood pooled black and shiny in the faint starlight from above, and the man's chest showed no hint of movement. Matt whirled, Colt ready, but it was Father Esteban who burst into view. Matt pointed toward Lawrence, lying still warm in sudden death. Father Esteban dropped to his knees beside the body.
I'll go get your stuff, Father, so you can say whatever it is that's got to be said over him. Then we can carry him with us and bury him tomorrow the same time as we put Pete in the ground.
It did not seem to matter a whit that neither Matt nor Father Esteban understood each other. Each knew what had to be done. Matt fetched the padre's gear from the gray and gave the bundle to Father Esteban, then slipped back into the brush. He wanted to find Lawrence's horse. It had to be somewhere fairly nearby, so they could carry the body on with them to the Branville place. The brothers were hot, sweaty, and near worn out from digging in the clay-heavy, gravel-laden soil on the bench above the Branville house, but unpleasant though it was a job that had to be done. Both of them retreated to the shade, while Father Esteban, Anita, and a weeping little boy said what had to be said and did what had to be done for the man named Lawrence, none of them knew his first name, and for Peter Constantine Branville. Father Esteban concluded the solemn service, closed the Bible in his hands, and made the sign of the cross above each grave. Then Anita and the boy Ricardo each picked up a handful of gravel to toss onto Pete's body. There was no coffin and no wood to build one, so he was laid to rest, still wrapped inside Matt's bedroll tarp. Lawrence did not have that much. They simply laid him in the bottom of the grave and put a kerchief over his face to keep the dirt off. It was done as a matter of respect for humankind, and not out of any regard for this particular very flawed example of the breed. When Anita and the boy took Father Esteban inside, Sam and Matt picked up their shovels again and moved forward to fill the graves. They would fashion crosses to set at the heads of the graves later.
You pleased me last night, you know.
How's that?
When you told me that Wilhelm is still alive, he must not have been there when Coronado and his men struck. I am glad. When we run into him again, Matt, he is mine. I owe him.
I don't have any quarrel with that, brother. After what he did to you when you couldn't fight back, yeah, I figure you do owe him.
It is a debt that I will repay with interest compounded.
Fair enough, Sam. Fair enough.
They filled both graves and mounded them, then searched along the bench for flat slabs of shale to use as makeshift paving that would serve to discourage animals from digging into them. Nothing could keep out all the small burrowing animals, but they did what they reasonably could. They were almost finished when Father Esteban and Anita came outside. The priest got his horse and climbed rather awkwardly onto it. Anita and he spoke briefly, then the padre reined away and started off toward town. Anita watched him for a moment, then walked up to where Matt and Sam were working.
Should one of us ride with him to see that he gets back all right?
He travels with the hand of God protecting him. He will be fine. He asked me to give you his thanks, both of you. He said he will pray for your souls.
What can we do for you? Are you and your boy all right?
Things will never be the same. Never. But we will survive. I have asked the good father to send a message to my family. Our farm is poor, but their hearts are good and their hands willing. They will come here. Together we will work this land. The cattle, maybe farm a little. Together we will go on.
I'm glad. I know Pete would be pleased to know that you're going to be all right.
Yes, this is true. He will be. May I ask you something?
Of course, anything.
You did not say what it was that happened to my wonderful Peter. Where was it that you found him exactly?
It was Sam who turned and pointed up the mountain.
There, high up. There is an old Spanish mine. We found him on a slope of loose rocks just below the old Arastra.
Whatever could Peter have been doing up there? That old thing is useless, just like the ground around it. We cannot get the cattle up that high for summer grazing. It is too steep to go directly up and too far around otherwise. The don we bought this place from did not even charge us for those hectares when we calculated the price.
Sam and Matt exchanged startled looks.
You own that ground?
Yes, of course. But as I say, it is useless to us. We have no way to go there except too far around to be worth the trouble. But we went there to see it when we first looked at this land. Neither Peter nor I knew anything about mines, but we looked. We even took pieces of rock from there and carried them to San Iba. We showed them to Lieutenant Espinosa, but he does not know anything about such things either. He was kind enough to take the rocks from us and send them to a friend who is knowledgeable about these things. They are worthless. We were already quite sure of that, but it was good of the alcalde to confirm that this was so.
Yes, mighty good of him.
Isn't it just?
Anita lifted her face toward the sky, her expression wistful.
It was a good day that we rode up to the mine. We went, all of us, together. Poor little Ricardo had no choice about this, for he was not yet born. But he was with us just the same.
Anita gathered up her skirts and ran for the sanctuary of the home she had shared with her beloved Pete.
I'll be damned.
Yes, exactly. No wonder Williams and Espinosa were ragging Pete. They were stealing from him and Anita. Whatever it is they were taking out of the ground up there, all of it belongs to Anita.
Explains why they killed him, too. Once he found out just where it was they were mining, on his own land but without his permission, yeah, they had to pay up or get him out of the way.
A bullet is cheaper than a going mine.
Kind of cold, these gents.
Tell me, Matt, do you think we should discuss this with them?
Yeah. Yeah, brother, I kind of think that we should.
We'll stay here today and see what we can do to help Anita and the boy get settled a little. Then tomorrow, why don't we take a little ride into San Iba?
Yeah, let's.
It was late morning by the time the brothers reached San Iba. The town was quiet and pleasant, with ladies, both American and Mexican, visiting on the sidewalks and children playing in the vacant lots and alleys, and in the streets whenever their mothers did not notice. A few horsemen were visible, and there were wagons and buggies parked along the rails in the business district. Stray dogs and wandering chickens crossed the road. Sam and Matt rode the length of the street to Doc Tippett's place and dismounted to lead their horses inside, Sam on his own good mount and Matt with the rented paint.
Come to get your horse back, have you?
Yep.
You could use more rest than this. You used him hard before you brought him in here.
Yes, sir, I know, but I need him.
Fine. He's your horse.
We have some traveling to do, my brother and me. Slow, though. I won't be asking more than a road jog out of him.
Well, that won't hurt him. Probably.
We'll leave Sam's horse and all our gear here for a little while if that's all right with you, Doc. We have to do some shopping, lay in some supplies. We'll come back as soon as we're done over at the Mercantile. We'd appreciate it if you'd figure up what we owe you. We can settle up before we leave.
You ain't coming back? I thought you came here to visit with your friend.
We could be back, but we don't know that for sure. Anyway, Pete is dead.
Dead? How? What happened?
We found him under a slide of rock and shale up on the mountain above his place.
That's terrible.
Yes, indeed it is.
Tippett had no idea just how terrible it was, murder being a terrible thing indeed, but they had no intention of telling Doc or anyone else about that aspect of Pete's death. Yet. The plan the brothers had come up with before they set out from the ranch that morning was that Anita and Ricardo would say nothing. She and the boy would wait there for her family to join her. Matt and Sam would ride to a town called Rancho Diego, which was the military headquarters for this district of northern Mexico. They had neither the intention nor the desire to start a war with the entire Mexican army. After all, with odds of several thousand to one against them, even the Blood Brothers did not feel confident of victory. In this case, they agreed, discretion would be in order. They would ride to Rancho Diego and have a word with the district commander in the hope that he could offer some measure of justice to the young widow from San Iba. Maybe he could offer a prison cell, or better yet, a hangman's rope to Lieutenant Antonio Espinosa, too, they hoped. Now all they needed was food enough to carry them for a few days until they reached Rancho Diego, wherever that was.
Say, Doc?
Hmm?
Tippett finished cleaning out the paint's hoof and set the foot down, straightening his own back with a grimace.
Oh, I swear I'd give this business up and retire to a nice place over the coast if I could find anybody fool enough to buy it. Do you boys want a livery stable? Jeep? No? Oh, well. Now, what's your question, Matt?
Do you know a place called Rancho Diego?
Of course. It's an actual ranch, by the way, not a town. Belongs to the governor of this district. I hear he's got himself an army garrison and Lord knows what all else there. What do you need the governor for?
Sam and Matt exchanged glances. A governor was likely even better for their purposes than a military commander. A civil officer was more likely to want to help one of his citizens than an army officer. Their plan shifted in that direction without either of them having to utter a word about it. They would appeal to the governor on behalf of Anita and her family. Hopefully, he would take care of Antonio Espinosa. The brothers, however, wanted to handle Gerald Williams themselves. They intended to do that as soon as they returned from Rancho Diego.
We heard there is a man at this Rancho Diego place that we want to talk with, but we don't know where it is.
It's easy enough found. Will you be gone long?
I don't know. How long will it take to get there and come back again?
I didn't mean it that way. You said you want to go buy some things for the traveling. We'll be at the store very long.
Oh, not very, I suppose. You know, we'll just pick up a little of this, a little of that.
Give me 20 minutes or a half hour. I'll get your horse ready, Matt. I'll make you up a sack of grain to carry with you. And I'll draw you out a map of how to get from here to Rancho Diego without going all the way back up the border. And I can save you a half day of travel.
Thanks, Doc. We appreciate it.
Half an hour, then.
We've got it. Thanks.
The brothers walked out into the bright sunshine on San Iba's main street.
I don't know, Sam. You think we should go over to the hotel and have some lunch before we set out?
No. The last time I set foot in that place, I got thrown in prison for being an uppity Indian. I think what we need to do is buy what we need and stay out of sight until Doc has the horses and that sketch ready.
All right. We'll go straight over to the mercantile and make our purchases, then go around back to the alley and find a shady spot where we can open some cans and make a quick lunch that way.
Sam looked around at the quiet, pleasant street.
That sounds better, Matt. There is something about this town that I do not like, brother.
Your imagination acting up on you again, is it?
Call it imagination if you like, but you know I have been right more times than you probably care to admit.
Yeah, reckon you have. So this time I'll go along with you. We'll walk straight over to the store, get what we gotta get, and then leave. We can hunker down and have a bite to eat out back at Doc's corrals. How does that sound?
Reasonable. I like the sound of it.
Consider it done, then. I'd like 10 cents worth of those licorice sticks, please.
Sweet tooth bothering you, brother.
Yeah, it is. Probably the same one that made you buy that poke of whorehound candies.
I thought I'd gotten away with that.
Nothing escapes old Eagle Eye here.
That's your Indian name, is it?
If it isn't, then it ought to be.
Matt glanced at the young woman behind the counter as she handed him his licorice. Then he tilted his head and gave her a speculative look.
Thank you.
The proprietor's daughter, he supposed. She was not bad. Blonde, pale, brown-eyed, 20 or thereabouts. A trifle on the skinny side, but not bad. It seemed a pity they had to leave so soon.
Is that everything?
Sam began rummaging through the burlap sack of goods they had purchased.
Tinned meat, jerky, flour, honey, hardtack, canned peaches, coffee.
Already ground, I hope.
Yes, Matt. It's already been ground.
Salt. Did you get salt?
We have salt.
And bacon.
I didn't get any bacon.
Miss, would you please add some bacon? Half a side of it.
Half a side? It will get everything around it greasy.
Would you please wrap the bacon real good, miss? I'll carry the bacon separate if you like, Sam.
Darn right I do. I don't want all that salt and grease getting in my saddlebags.
I said I'd carry it, didn't I?
Fine. See that you do.
Will that be all?
I think so. Is there anything else you want, Matt?
No, this should do.
The girl added up a column of figures she'd been jotting down on the roll of brown wrapping paper beside the counter.
That'll be $4.62.
Pay the lady, brother.
Sam picked up the bulkier of the two sacks of groceries they had selected, leaving Matt with the heavier sack containing the bacon and the licorice. Matt handed over a $5 half eagle in U.S. money and collected his change, a mixture of Mexican and American coins. He was not sure if the change was correct, but decided to assume that it was, rather than try to convert the Mexican coins to some measure that he understood. Besides, the little lady looked like she could be trusted.
Thank you, miss.
Matt touched the brim of his Stetson and followed Sam to the back of the store, where a door looked like it should lead into the alley behind the block of buildings. Just as Matt reached the doorway, Sam came bursting backward into him, nearly knocking him off his feet.
Hey, watch it!
Hush!
What?
I said hush, Matt. I think. Wait a minute.
Sam removed his wide-brimmed Stetson and leaned against the door jamb, pulling the door open a fraction of an inch and peering out.
Trouble?
Uh-huh. Big trouble. There are two men out there. I recognize them from the mine. They work as guards there. They work for Gerald Williams.
Do you think someone saw us on the street and recognized us?
Your guess is as good as mine. But I'd say that pretty much has to be what happened.
I'll check out front. Maybe we can go out that way. Your pal Wilhelm is hiding behind a barrel on the left, and there are a couple of men with guns standing close beside the building to the right.
If Wilhelm is hiding, how did you...
I didn't say he was doing a very good job of it.
Come to throw a party for us, have they?
Yeah. And you know what kind of party it would be. The same kind they gave to Pete would be my guess. They're serious, Sam, and they got shotguns. It's awful hard to outrun a load of buckshot, and even a lousy shot can hit a target big as a man.
What do you suggest we do now?
Matt looked around the store with its shelves and boxes and bundles of goods.
Well, we aren't going to run out of food or ammunition, so I think we should send the young lady and her family out of the line of fire, then see if we can whittle the odds down before we even think about making a break for it.
A siege, you mean?
Yes, Sam, I guess that I do. It's either that or surrender to them, and somehow I don't think that would be a very good idea.
Unfortunately, I agree. In that case...
Sam closed and bolted the back door, then took up a position at the front.
You're the charmer, Matt. I'll leave it up to you to get the lady and her family out.
Reckon I took care of that in jig time.
Sam crouched near the broken front window, surveying the street beyond. After a moment, he lifted his Colt and took careful aim.
First blood to our side.
You dropped one?
No, but that one will have a miserable time trying to sit down for the next few weeks or so. There are more of them than I thought. This could be a long afternoon.
I don't mind. Just as long as we're both here to see the end of it.
Matt tipped a flour barrel on its side and rolled it toward the front windows to begin building a barricade.
Matt, we have to break out of here.
Now there's an original thought.
Matt raised his revolver and sighted carefully down the barrel.
One nice thing. We got the entire store stock of shells to fire if need be. We're not likely to run out of ammunition.
It will be dark soon. I think we should make a break out the back. Is that man still there?
Now look.
Of the original two who had been in the alley, one had disappeared sometime during the afternoon and had not come back. Matt crossed the store to the back door, but instead of giving himself away by opening it, climbed onto the stepladder they'd placed there earlier. He removed his hat and peered out through the transom. The glass panel in the transom had been painted over, but enough of the paint had flaked away that in some places it was possible to see through. Matt returned to the windows at the front, both of which were broken now and lying in pieces across the floor.
The man's still there. I'm not sure what he's doing, picking a scab or something. Anyway, he isn't paying much attention to the door.
And he doesn't have his gun in his hands?
Matt shook his head.
Then why don't we slip out and have a word with him?
We?
You know good and well that I am better at this sort of thing than you are.
I don't know any such thing.
I do. But have it your way. We can flip a coin for it.
That sounds fair.
Let me take a look first. I want to see what we will be up against. I'll be right back.
Matt kept an eye on the street where Williams and his men were concentrated. A few moments later, he felt a flow of fresh air on the back of his neck. When he turned to see where it was coming from, he saw that the ladder had been moved and the back door was standing slightly ajar. There was no sign of Sam August Webster Two Wolves.
Dang you, Sam.
Sam was gone only a minute or two. When he came back, he stepped inside and crossed the store in a crouch.
Give me 2 or 3 minutes. Then throw a couple of shots out the window. Come down through the alley to the livery. I'll have the horses ready.
What'd you do with the guard?
He's enjoying a nice nap. But I predict he may have a headache when he wakes up.
Sam picked up the bags of supplies they'd purchased earlier and laid another coin on the counter to cover anything they had consumed during the afternoon, either by eating it, drinking it, or shooting it.
3 minutes.
Then he was gone. It was almost fully dark by the time Matt slipped inside the livery barn, Colt in hand, just in case something had gone wrong.
It's all right, Matt.
Doc, is that you? Where's Sam?
In back, saddling the horses. It is good you boys made your break while you still could. Lieutenant Espinosa is up on the mountain trying to round up all his men and bring them down here. He sent them to find a runaway slaves and bring them back. Now he wants them to lay siege to the mercantile. I'm glad he isn't here for more than one reason. That fool Espinosa would probably try to burn you out and set the whole town on fire.
Sam came into the barn from the back.
I have the horses ready.
Do you intend for us to make a run for it or try and sneak out quiet?
Sneak. I wrapped the horses' feet in burlap to soften their sound. We can remove the wrapping when we are clear.
All right. Doc, thanks. You've been a real friend.
Truth is, I've enjoyed meeting you boys. I wish we had some more of your kind around here. Unless...
He inclined his head in the direction of the mercantile.
Less of their sort. Good luck.
Sam and Matt went out into what was now full darkness. The moon was not yet up, and the only light in the sky was from the stars.
Doc acts like he thinks we won't be back.
Doc doesn't know us very well, does he?
The brothers reined their horses away and headed very quietly out of San Iba. 5 days later, the Blood Brothers returned to San Iba.
Feels a little different riding in this way, doesn't it?
The big difference lay in the fact that this time they were entering the town at the head of a troop of Mexican cavalry commanded by Major Oswaldo de la Rosa.
We'll drop out here and see to our horses. We'll join you as soon as they're settled.
Very well, gentlemen. My men will set up camp. Then we shall see what we shall see, eh?
So we shall. So we shall.
The brothers dismounted at the doors to the livery and watched the 70 or so gaudily uniformed troopers pass by in a column of twos, guidon and national flags snapping in a stiff breeze. A trio of dogs came rushing out to get underfoot, and almost everyone in the community came out onto the sidewalks to watch this procession. Doc Tippett came outside wiping his hands on a greasy rag, his legs covered by an equally filthy blacksmith's leather apron.
Considering the way you left out of here, I didn't expect to see you boys again. How'd you manage all this? Surely the governor didn't take your word about conditions here.
No, but then we didn't ask him to. We gave him our side of it, of course, but we suggested...
Who suggested?
Okay, Sam suggested that the governor send someone honorable and trustworthy to look things over and talk with Espinosa first. Then, also with a number of townspeople, before he makes up his mind about how things are here. It'll be up to the major out there what, if anything, ought to be done after that.
Well, a man will certainly get an earful from me.
We suggested that you be on the list of people he should talk to, Doc. You and Father Esteban and the other leaders in the community, Mexican and Anglo alike. Governor Hernandez sent his best man. He said we can trust the major to be scrupulously fair.
If he does that, and if he's fair as he's claimed to be, lads... I think our alcalde will be finding himself out of a job, and this place will be better for it.
Too late to do any good for our friend Pete, though.
I heard what happened to him, boys. Anita came in to buy us supplies and go to Mass. She was still upset. She told everyone she saw that day, and Father Esteban confirmed the things she said, and it's all around town by now. The whole community knows, and they have come down hard against Gerald Williams and Espinosa. Folks were already pretty unhappy about Williams and his bunch shooting up the place when they thought they had you cornered that day. And already set the mood. And Anita Branville's story was the icing on the cake. Lieutenant's been staying out of sight for the past couple of days, and I have no idea where Williams has gotten to.
Sam looked at Matt and received a nod from his brother without a word passing between them.
Doc, we've changed our mind about putting our horses up right now. There's something we need to do first. Would you please explain to Major De La Rosa that we'll be back as quick as we can?
Sure, whatever you say.
Sam handed Matt the reins to his horse.
Excuse me for a moment, brother.
Even Matt was uncertain what Sam was up to when he disappeared inside the livery. He came back outside moments later. Sam had dipped two fingers into the pot of axle grease Tippett had been using in there and smeared the black grease in ragged swipes across his forehead and onto each cheek. It might not be exactly traditional, but there was no reason the grease could not serve more than adequately as war paint. By unspoken consent, the brothers drew rein a quarter mile short of the gate leading into the mine. They dismounted and tied the horses out of sight from the road.
Let me observe from above. I will signal down to you if I see anything.
All right, I'll be ready.
Sam quickly scaled a cut bank above the road and disappeared into the sparse brush. Matt checked his rifle and then his Colt before giving his Stetson a tug and setting out cautiously along the side of the road. Gerald Williams and his crew, whatever was left of it, would very likely have a sentinel posted. 100 yards down the road, Matt paused. A Winchester rifle lay in the middle of the road, its stock broken at the grip. Above that spot, he could see an unconscious man slumped against the bole of a slender pine. It took Matt a moment to realize that the guard's hands appeared to be tied behind him and around the tree. Sam had already been busy up there. Matt walked more swiftly after that. He did not want to get too far behind and miss out on all the fun. As quickly as he moved, though, Sam was still ahead of him. When Matt reached the mine buildings and again slowed his pace, Sam stepped out of the blacksmith shop and stood in plain sight to motion Matt forward.
They're all inside.
Is Williams with them?
That I do not know. Case Wilhelm is there, though. I heard his voice clearly.
Your pal?
Yes.
How'd you want to do this?
Sam's dark face, its broad planes highlighted by the black war paint, creased into something resembling a smile.
Wait here. I will, shall we say, ask them to come outside.
Any idea how many of them are in there?
No. Do you care?
Nope, just curious.
Give me a few minutes and you can count them.
Sam first went into the nearby tool shed and emerged carrying a bundle of dirty, much-used cloth, several of the canvas sacks that were used to haul minerals up from the Arastra to be packed and shipped away for refining. Draping the canvas over his shoulder, Sam went to the rear of the bunkhouse and scaled the corner, using the notches in the logs like rungs on a ladder to reach the roof. Once there, he moved very carefully toward the chimney at the roof peak, his moccasins making no sound on the dry timbers the way boot heels would have. Sam reached inside his shirt and pulled out several handfuls of green moss that he must have gathered in the woods after they left the horses. His expression set in a grim, satisfied smile, he first dropped the moss inside the chimney to create smoke as soon as it hit whatever coals were below, then draped the thick canvas over the chimney opening. After that, Sam stood waiting on the roof while Matt remained where he was at ground level. Their wait was not a long one. Three burly men came outside, then Case Wilhelm, and finally one more guard. Five men in all. None of them was armed. But then they came out not for a fight, but to escape the thick smoke that was billowing out through the newly opened door, and even seeping from under the eaves of the roof where Sam stood watching. They came out stumbling and rubbing their eyes. Three of the men were barefoot and only partially dressed, but Wilhelm held on to his precious bamboo flail. Precious, that is, to him. He carried it as if it were a badge of high office. Matt moved over closer to the front wall so he could not be seen from inside. If the person who remained in there wanted trouble, Matt did not want to make it easy for him by offering himself as a target.
"You can come on out, Mr. Williams. It's that fella I told you about that called himself Tam O'Shanter. He knows you're in there, Mr. Williams. He's to the left of the door. Be careful. Has a rifle."
Matt was only mildly annoyed with Wilhelm for giving such a complete warning. After all, Gerald Williams was Wilhelm's employer, and a man rightly should show loyalty to his own.
"Don't shoot. I'm coming out."
He stepped into view in the doorway and stood there rubbing the stinging smoke from his eyes while tears streamed down his cheeks. He blinked and sucked in clean, smoke-free air for a moment, then looked around to find Matt standing nearby.
"You and that friend of yours have ruined everything."
"That man is my friend. He's also my brother. You and your friends came near to killing him. Would have killed him if you had your way about it. And you did kill a friend of mine. Pete Branville was a better man than you'll ever know, mister. Yet you and that fancy lieutenant killed him and a whole lot of other folks. It's time you two were called to account for your sins."
"You've killed men."
"Yes, I have. And every one of them had his fair chance at me, and each one for a reason. What about you, mister? You have a hog leg on your hip. Do you want to try me?"
No. I am not a gunfighter. I've seen you shoot. I know how fast you are. Here, wait."
Williams carefully unfastened his gun belt and let it slide down his leg to the ground.
"There. I'm not armed now."
The man stepped a few paces closer to Matt and stood with his legs slightly spread and his hands clasped at the waist. There was something about the tension in the set of the man's shoulders and a tightness in his jaw that told Matt things might not be all they appeared. Matt took a half step backward and let his right hand fall free and relax to his side. Gerald Williams squeezed his forearms hard against his belly, and spring-loaded gambler rigs hidden inside his sleeves snapped a pair of dark, deadly little derringers into his waiting hands. A crooked smile began to form on the man's lips, and then froze there. Matt Bodine's Colt was already in his hand.
"Hey, He was supposed to be a fast man with a gun.
It's a funny thing about that. Something every man who's fast with a gun ought to know, and every fella who isn't fast does know. Somewhere out there, there's sure to be someone who's faster.
Even faster than you, mister?
That rule applies to everybody except me, of course.
Smoke continued to pour out of the old headquarters building, and when Sam climbed down from the roof, he looked like an avenging angel, or devil, traversing the walkways of Hades.
You! Are you behind all this?
No, you are. You and that man lying dead there, and the Mexican popinjay who by now should be under arrest in town. You are the ones who brought it down upon yourselves. My brother and I are only the instruments of destruction. You yourselves are the cause.
Fact remains, you cowered at my feet.
Fact remains, I was in chains then. Now I am not. You four move over there where my brother can keep an eye on you. Wilhelm, you can stand right where you are. Or you can drop to your knees and beg, whichever you prefer.
Get down on my knees for a stinking engine? That'll be the day.
That's right. This will indeed be the day.
Sam unbuckled his gun belt and draped it over a corner notch on the log mine building. He stripped off his shirt and hung it over the holstered Colt and perched his hat on top of that.
What's this, engine? You think you can best me?
Yes, I do.
Wilhelm's hand flashed, and the bamboo flail whipped through the air. A good 8 feet separated Wilhelm from Sam, so Wilhelm's intent obviously was to intimidate. Sam Two Wolves did not act like he was much intimidated. And this time, there were no chains to bind him. This time, Sam stepped in behind the flail, moving with deceptive speed. Wilhelm lifted the flail. Sam ignored it. He moved in close and delivered a sharp left to Wilhelm's short ribs. That brought the bigger man's hand reflexively down. Before Wilhelm realized what he was up to, Sam snatched the bamboo flail away from him and then quickly faded backward. This time, Sam Two Wolves was the one who held the flail. Smiling coldly, Sam raised the flail. Wilhelm lifted his elbows to protect his eyes from the expected cut of the bamboo. Instead, Sam took the flail in both hands and snapped it in two. Contemptuously, he tossed the shattered and now useless scraps of bamboo onto the ground at Wilhelm's feet. The big man stared in disbelief, looking as if it were he and not merely some strips of bamboo that had been broken.
You oughtn't to have... done that?
Sam said nothing. He stepped in close and flicked another hard left, this time his punch landing on the bridge of Wilhelm's nose. Blood sprayed from the freshly broken nose. Wilhelm rocked back on his heels. Sam drilled in with a series of repeated lefts to the face, then a devastating right to the breadbasket that doubled the big man over and dropped him to his knees. Sam stepped back and waited. But there was no fight in Wilhelm now. When he looked up, there were tears streaming down his face and snot mixed in with blood that ran from his nose.
Gone. Everything all gone. All gone.
Get up, you coward! Get up and start thinking about what your life in a Mexican prison will be like.
Prison?
Murder, Wilhelm. How many men have you murdered here? How many will they find when they dig the slopes down the hill? Gerald Williams may have escaped the scales of justice, but you and your lieutenant friend won't. We are taking you to San Iba, and then on to the governor's palace. You will stand trial, Wilhelm. If you are very, very lucky, the governor will allow you to go to the gallows. If not, have you ever seen what the inside of a Mexican prison is like? I don't mean some little jail. I mean one of those stone-walled dungeons they call a prison down there. If I were you, Wilhelm, I would pray for that hangman's noose.
Wilhelm shook his head. He stared mutely for long moments at the shattered scraps that were all that remained of his flail and of the authority he had wielded over other men here at this place. Then he came to his feet in a rush. Sam prepared to defend himself, but Wilhelm's charge brushed past Sam. Instead, he lunged for the Colt that was hanging at the corner of the building. Wilhelm's hand closed over the grip. He snatched the revolver free of leather and whirled. The big man dropped to his knees, Sam's Colt falling from suddenly lifeless fingers. Wilhelm pitched face forward onto the hard ground. Stringy goblets of gray and red brain matter dripped from the side of the building behind where Wilhelm had just been. Matt dropped his Colt back into his holster.
Sorry to butt in.
I will forgive you.
Sam stepped around Case Wilhelm's body and reached for his shirt and hat and gun belt.
You boys, any of you wants to try something, don't. Otherwise you can start walking.
Where?
San Iba. The Mexican authorities are waiting there to see you. Now walk.
Matt finished tacking one last flattened tin can onto the sturdy grain bin and stood back to admire his handiwork.
There. That ought to keep the rats out.
Don't be in such a hurry to think that you are finished. We still have to pour the grain back into it.
This particular bin was supposed to hold a mixture of corn, milo, and barley to be used for chicken scratch. Several other larger bins held oats for the horses and a little corn that was given to calves being fattened for the family table rather than sale at auction.
The place is looking well, wouldn't you say?
Just in time, too, I think.
What do you mean?
By way of an answer, Sam inclined his head toward the road to San Iba. A motley procession of milk cows and runny-nosed children was coming down the road, led by a pair of ancient, high-wheeled carretas of the type it was said the old-time Comancheros favored. The huge carts were drawn by tall, rangy oxen with gutta-percha bulbs affixed to the tips of their impressively broad horns.
Company?
More like family would be my guess. I would say that Anita's people have arrived. It looks to me like they have come prepared to stay.
That's just as well. We can't hang around forever, and Lord knows she needs help running this place. Even with whatever money she can get from renting out the mine up there, it'd be tough on her. A widow woman with two little kids to raise.
Anita will be fine. She has family and she has income. Before long, she will find herself another husband. Count on it.
Poor Pete. It was a bad end for a good man.
It can be like that, brother. You never know when or how or even why. But sooner or later, we all come to the end of our trail.
Ain't you the little ray of sunshine today?
Just trying to be realistic, that's all.
Personally, I could use a little less realism and a little more fun.
Matt tossed his tack hammer onto a nearby shelf and somewhat more carefully set a box of carpet tacks beside it.
I have a question for you, Sam.
All right.
Have you ever been to California?
Not lately. Not lately, I haven't.
We're practically there.
It is only, what, 500 miles or so?
Yeah, something like that. Close enough, anyhow. You want to go see what it's like over there? They say the grass is belly-deep to a tall horse and the senoritas are beautiful.
Or these senoritas look like horses.
Close enough. You want to take a look for yourself?
You know me. Always concerned about bailing you out of the trouble you keep getting us into.
Sam carefully laid aside the tools he had been using to flatten tin cans for their rat-proofing project.
Let's go meet Anita's family.
And tell her we'll be riding on now.
Yes, that too.
The brothers walked into the sunshine together, each with his thoughts already on whatever road lay ahead.
Blood Bond, Slaughter Trail is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1991, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, James Konacek, Jeff Baker, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton. Additional original music by Brian Patton, Greg Reinfeld, and Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Blood Bond, be sure to look for the Eagles series, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Read the Pinnacle Edition, visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
The First Mountain Man, number one.
Are we under attack?
Preacher put two bucks on the ground and tripled a third when he fired his pistol. He grabbed up his second brace to let them roar, but his left hand gun was a clean miss and his right hand gun misfired. Richard fired. The ball catching a brave in the stomach and stopping him cold. The missionary stood rock still for a second, stunned at the gore he caused. The preacher was on his feet, his long blade knife at the ready when the buck came tearing at him, a war axe in his hand. The preacher sidestepped slow from the axe and cut the buck across the back, from his shoulder down to his buttocks, the big blade slicing deep. The Indian fell and rolled on the ground, coming to rest near Penelope. Reaching out, he clamped one hand around her ankle, but Edmund picked up a rock about the size of a grapefruit and smashed the buck on the head. The preacher jumped for his hawk and it cocked it, leveling the 54 caliber rifle just as the brave leaped out.
Reload, goddammit! Edmund, see to the horses! The
preacher dropped the rifle and hurriedly set to work trying to charge his pistols. Across the campsite, Melody spotted a brave leveling his bow.
Preacher, look out!
The preacher threw himself to one side and the arrow embedded itself into a tree. Preacher charged the lone brave and clubbed him with his pistol, smashing his head on the way down. Turning to check on Edmund, Preacher realized that the man had never made it to the horses. He was on the ground, unconscious, and a Blackfoot was grappling with Richard beside him. Richard was holding on to the buck's wrists. The Blackfoot kneed him in his groin and the man went down. Melody grabbed up a burning brand from the fire and jammed it against the engine's arm. The brave backhanded her in the face, knocking her down. Preacher leveled his pistol. The ball struck the brave in the head, tearing away part of his jaw and slamming the man to the ground. A young buck, armed with only a war axe, took a vicious swing at Preacher. Preacher clubbed him with the butt of his hawk just as another brave jumped onto his back. He tried to ride Preacher down, but the mountain man was able to flip the brave off his back. Buck hit the ground, rolled, and came to his feet, just in time to receive the full length of Preacher's knife in his belly, cutting edge up. Preacher jerked the knife upward, the heavy blade ripping through stomach and into lung and heart. Blackfoot was dead before he stretched out on the cold ground. The fight was over.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net.